It couldn't happen. It couldn't happen in Lausanne, could it? On a bright Saturday lunchtime, amongst all the market shoppers and tourists, were my ears deceiving me? No. As I climbed up onto Place Saint-Françoise, there they were, about to enter the square. A great mass of noisy protesters in Lausanne, singing and chanting, whistling and drumming. There was a minimalist police escort and many more people with cameras. And there were mostly young people at the front anyway, and of course amongst the noisiest. They had Bluetooth microphones and a loudspeaker on wheels. Change days. And they were protesting about climate change, as far as I could see, as far as I could see from the banners that they were carrying and waving. Although there seemed to be lots of other individual protests mixed in, as is always the case. We are used to such sights these days in the UK, and indeed all of us on our televisions. But our Parliament has been besieged by angry, flag-waving protesters, Brexiteers on the one hand and Remainers on the other, such that our TV presenters, I don't know if you've noticed, have had to be wearing special earplugs and these head mics in order to file their reports to camera. It's been so noisy. But today, we are not setting our feet on the immaculate streets of Lausanne, but in the dust of Jerusalem. And we're looking across Jerusalem's stony, sunny paths. And we can hear the voices of protest coming from the distance. They are voices that are crying out for freedom in an occupied land. The people are waving branches and spreading their coats along the road, just as they did when King David was welcomed into the city when he brought the Ark of the Covenant. So this must be someone else royal, someone like David, another king perhaps, to set us free from the tyrant's yoke. You've heard about him, of course. Apparently he's called Jesus of Nazareth. And today they are going to dare to proclaim him king. And then there's a bit of a commotion in the midst of the crowd, and Jesus comes into sight, and he's riding a colt, a beast of burden, not a brave stallion or horse-drawn chariot, merely a colt, the foal of a donkey. Oh well, the people and disciples still give him a royal welcome. They lay their coats on the colt and on the road before him as they welcome him into the holy city. And they chant, "Hosanna, blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." It's not quite as disciplined and well-behaved as our Lausanne protest. And it does seem a little understated and innocent to us now. But remember, Israel wasn't a free country. These people were occupied by that foreign power and bitterly hated enemy. And that foreign power could come down hard, even on a peaceable, joyful assembly, much less on one that was declaring a teacher to be a king over and above Rome's emperor. And yet, here they are, gathering, chanting, cheering, sowing the seeds of Good Friday as they scatter their garments innocently on Palm Sunday. While we may think of it today as a very familiar story, a story about giving a royal welcome to a religious teacher and shouting, "Blessed is the King who comes in the Lord, in the name of the Lord," that was a very highly subversive act at the time. Rome ruled with an iron fist, and they took subversive action seriously. those gathered on that first Palm Sunday were risking their lives, and they knew it. And today we stand with them. I suppose few of us are risking our lives for our faith, even though we declare that there is only one ruler, that there's no person, economic philosophy, or political party that's above Christ. We make the same claim. Only Jesus gets our royal welcome. And I said, not really, and only few of us. Because, of course, there are those who have, and there are those who are giving their lives and livelihoods for that faith in Jesus. And so our Holy Week begins with shouts of protest. Of course, we'll learn later in the week that this royal welcome will not last. We humans are fragile creatures, and we often get it right before messing it all up again. Our momentary courage often precedes our running away, and that's just what will happen. The crowd which today shouts Hosanna will on Friday shout, crucify him, crucify him. And they will come to fully understand the danger that Jesus poses to their stability. They will see that he's not a military leader bringing them into freedom, and they will sacrifice him for continued peace with Rome. So today we again set our feet on the road. It's a road that Melanie has beautifully displayed in these simple jam jars. It's a road that involves the Last Supper, the garden where Jesus prayed, a road to the cross and a road to the tomb. And while you may already know the ending, pretend for a moment that you don't. The disciples didn't. When Jesus died on Friday, that was supposed, that seemed to be the end. So plant your feet in the dust of Jerusalem today. Feel the palm branch in your hand and remember the teacher who rode through the subversive protest on a colt. For this story is a story of life. There is life in this week, in our lives. There is joy to be found, and love, and fear, and grief, and betrayal, and pain. There are even the ordinary things in the story this week. People eating and drinking and the washing of tired feet. This is where we can learn both joy and grief, celebration and pain. We can see our ordinary lives echoed in the life and love of Jesus. We can see our imperfect lives reflected in the perfect and saving love of Christ. And in it, we too may find seeds of hope. We rehearse the story. We rehearse the story of love and death and resurrection, just as every year around this time, the Jewish people gather in their homes to celebrate the Passover, to tell the story of God's people journeying from slavery into freedom. We then are invited to gather on Jerusalem's streets again, to shout Hosanna and sing this story. We make our protest. We declare that despite what the world may tell us, our highest loyalty is to Christ alone, the one who died and lives again, the one who binds us to people of all races, all nationalities and all affiliations, Christ, the one who joins us together with people we love and with people we'd rather not associate with. And we gather with the church around the world to tell this story, because every Christian must sing it again. Not only for what is remembered, like the Jewish nation, but for what is experienced in the here and now. We sing the story as the church did last year, and will no doubt again next. Because this story is not just Jesus' story. It's our story. We sing it again, not just for what's remembered, but also for what we have experienced of God's saving love in our lives and in the lives of others around us, known and unknown, that great company of believers. We sing it again because it's our story. And we sing it, finally, to proclaim it to the world. Our God is a God of love and hope, a God who weeps with those who weep, who rejoices with those who rejoice, a God who cares for each and every one of us. It's the story of how love and grace became flesh and defeated death and changed everything. It's the story of every time you have experienced grace when you thought that the world had ended. It's the story of